Welcome to On the Radar News Analysis on this 3rd of September 2023, the first Wednesday of a brand new month. Good afternoon. I'm your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, and I'll be with you until 14:30. Now, as always, whether you're at your desk in Windhoek, behind the wheel in Otjiwarongo, or tuning in from a farm, a classroom, or a clinic anywhere across Namibia, thank you for making time to join the conversation. Now, this afternoon, our focus tends to the stories shaping Namibia right now, from the president's recent visit to the Kavango Green Scheme and the ongoing electricity crisis threatening food production, to the broader implications these challenges hold for communities and the nation at large. We'll break down the headlines, unpack what they mean for ordinary Namibians, and connect the dots between policy, people, and lived realities. Now, on this program, On the Radar News Analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We examine the structures behind today's news, ask the tough questions, and bring in expert voices to help us make sense of where Namibia is heading. And of course, your voice matters here on Eagle FM. Share your views with us on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, WhatsApp, or through the Eagle FM website and app. From the hustle of Oshakati to the calm of Sakamun, from Khababas to Katima Molilo, thank you for spending your Wednesday afternoon with us. This is On the Radar News Analysis. Namibia stories unpacked and connected to the people who live them. Let's get right into the top stories making headlines today. The Namibia Statistics Agency has released detailed regional profile reports from the 2023 population and housing census. The 14 reports launched yesterday on the 2nd of September 2025 expand on the national census findings first published in October last year. Unlike the main report, which offered a broad national overview, this new profiles zoom in on each of Namibia's regions right down to the constituency level. They provide insights into population structures, living conditions, and development needs, giving government, local authorities, and development partners the data needed for accurate planning, resource allocation, and service delivery. By highlighting the demographic, social, and economic realities across the country, the reports are expected to strengthen evidence-based policy making and ensure that no community is left behind in Namibia's development agenda. Now, to help us unpack what those findings mean and why they matter, I'm joined now this afternoon by Ipumbo Sakaria, Manager of Corporate Communications at the Namibia Statistics Agency. Good afternoon, Mr. Sakaria. Pleasure to have you on the Radar News Analysis.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
Now tell us, when and where will the 2023 census regional reports be officially launched, and who is expected to preside over the launches in each region?
All right. Thank you for the question. Like you said, it's a regional profile. So just quickly a background. We had the census in 2023, which is the most senior or most complete statistical collection that the Statistics Agency conducts. And we derived out of that national, regional, as well as constituency data. Now, you might remember that before we started with the census, we went around and we asked stakeholders to assist us with the census, and that is via human resources as well as other resources, and the NSA received a lot of support in that. And therefore, one of the things that we ought to do is go back to those very same people that assisted us, say thank you that you assisted us with the data, and then here is the data. So where will it be done? It will be held in all the regions. In September, we started in the Karas region on Tuesday. What essentially happens in the regions is that we meet stakeholders such as the governor. We want them to be aware of the data. Then the police regional command. Then as well, that's for your Mondays. Then on your Tuesdays, you have your regional councils, inclusive of offices, ministries, and agencies, and members of the regional development coordination committees.
Okay.
On Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, we concentrate on the local authorities of those same regions, as well as institutions of higher education were available. So the idea is, as per the law requires us to disseminate the information. So once we have the data available, now is the time to disseminate it. So that's what's going to happen.
Okay. Now, will the Namibia Statistics Agency be focusing on other data sets as well at this time around?
The majority is essentially census data. It is so much data that you probably have need to have a different day just to talk about other data, but it's very, very incomprehensive. Questions might arise where people might want economic data on ABCD, that we should be able to provide it there on the spot.
Okay. Now tell us more about the events happening in the regions after the launch.
Okay. After the launch, the idea is we want the governors to launch this report. We want them to be the custodians of this data. And like I said, once that is done, we now take the data to the other stakeholders, students through institutes of higher education, and then, of course, local authorities. We want each local authority to have the data so that they can plan and understand what is going on in their locality and make use of the data for planning and as well, of course, monitoring. And essentially, yes, the idea is really just to share the data with all significant stakeholders, especially the ones that helped us with the 2023 census.
Mm. Now, Mr. Zakaria, just why is it important for Namibians to know about the 2023 census regional reports, and what did this report aim to achieve?
Okay, good question. Why? Number one, the law requires that the data must be disseminated. We also say the census is not complete until the data is disseminated, mm-hmm. and the country spent a lot of money to collect the data. Now, if we don't disseminate the data, if we keep it on our computers or in our offices, we do serious injustice, not just to the resources that have been availed for the census, but also for provision of information. Remember, statistics is important to come up with evidence-based planning and decision-making. Now, if that data is not available, then you have a challenge. So we released a national report, which means we have national data. Now we have dissected it and brought in regional data as well as constituency data with local authority data. And the idea is just that this data must reach the ground so that each and everybody plans accordingly to what they need based on latest available information. Why do we want it to be out there? It's because we believe with the availability of data, people tend to make better decisions for themselves and everybody around them.
Okay. Now, what kind of information is included in the regional reports, and how does it actually help us, the Namibians, to understand our communities better?
Okay, very good. Very good question. What is contained in there? You have demographic and socioeconomic data. So, and when we talk about demographic data, what we try to say is we give you population indicators for your region and all the constituencies, which means if we give you an example of Kavango West, we'll tell you what's happening in Pungul, Kurenkuru, Musese, Kapako, Kunkuni, Kamagoro, Mankuni, Tondoro constituencies. We'll break it down into not just demographic data, but socioeconomic data. So indicators will include your population size and growth, sex composition, age structure, the population density. Then we look at characteristics of the population, where we look at the marital status, death registration, people living with disabilities, access to ICT, education, school attendance, then of course population dynamics such as fertility, mortality, and then of course most importantly household indicators such as of course household sizes, head of household, what is the main source of income, access to certain assets. So a lot of data. Again, also sources of energy, water supply and sanitation, disposal, all these kind of things. And the interesting part is it has been broken down from national to regional to constituency basis. So why is it important? It's for everybody to make decisions based on how the situation is on their ground.
Mm. Now, my next question, with what you just answered, kind of gives me a picture of who can actually use this report. But tell us even more, who can actually use this report, and in what ways can regional authorities and institutions and the public benefit from the data?
Everybody can and should make use of the reports, not just planners and implementers, but you might have business persons that like to set up a shop somewhere. You probably want to understand, if I want to put up a business here, how many people are here? What is the socioeconomic environment? What's the education level here? So what is, you'll be able to identify what are the needs. So everybody can make use of it, whether it's the security sector, it's the planners, when you want to build a school. You need to know, okay, if in one area there may be 10,000 kids and in one area there may be 2,000 kids, you might allocate more resources to an area, for example, where there are more kids that need this service as compared to the other, or transportation services, accesses to facilities. So everybody, it's meant for everybody, not just planners and implementers, but everybody can make use of statistics. So it's for everybody.
Okay. Now, perhaps a question on many people's minds. How does the Namibia Statistics Agency ensure the data collected is accurate and reflective of realities across all regions?
Okay, very good question. Number one, realities across all regions is simple. The census was conducted through, it was a household census, which means we went to each and every home, every built-up structure, and we went into those homes and we asked questions. Then we have our own internal quality assurance mechanisms to ensure that data makes sense, meaning number one, first things must align, and then it needs to make statistical sense. Maybe just a quick breakdown of that. If we find a home and there's a lady that says she's 18 years old, but she maybe has 7 kids, then we can tell that something does not match statistically. Maybe she didn't understand the question, or it's an error in input, which means maybe when we inserted the data, there was an error there. Then you are able to trace back and say, okay, how many people live here? How many siblings are here? How old is this person? When did she do this? And you can do things. Then quality assurance also, we do, before we release all reports, they go through a thorough quality assurance process. And we say that our variance is only 5%, which means statistics must be, we must give you a 95% confidence interval that the data as collected is accurate. So that is done through, of course, going to each and every household and then ensuring that through the questionnaire, you ensure the data is inserted correctly and makes sense.
Okay. How will this regional report support future planning, policy making, and decision making in Namibia? So I feel like you've already touched on that, but still more.
Yes. Simply data provision, information provision. Like I said, you probably see better when there's a light instead of you walking through a dark tunnel.
Exactly.
So the idea of information is to provide such light so that decisions can be based on information that helps. Now, for example, 35 years after independence, the country must have changed. In 1990, we were 1.4 million. Right now, we are 3 million. So the planning that took place in 1990 will no longer accommodate the population growth over the past 35 years in all different sectors or spheres or areas. And hence, you want up-to-date data so that you can get such correct.
Okay. Now, you mentioned that this data is for all Namibians and not just for those that perhaps work in planning. But how can the public actually access this report?
They're currently available on our website, www.nsa.org.na. So people can get them electronically. You can go onto our website and get them. You just go to our to publications, and then you go to regional profiles, and then you download them there. That's one on the website. You may also ask us for the information. You can just simply write us an email, info@nsa.org.na, and say, can you please assist me with this type of information or with this report, and we shall do so. And thirdly, we'll also have a couple of printed reports that will avail throughout our engagements to ensure that people have the data.
Nice. I hope that Eagle FM will also get that hard copy. Any additional information that you would like to share with us, Mr. Zakaria?
It's really just to appreciate the Namibian nation for having taken part in the census, because without them, we couldn't have quality data. And so the first thing is appreciation to them. And then maybe just to inform the stakeholders that we are coming to visit, that we are coming loaded with a lot of information, and the information needs to get out there. And it's just our hope that people make use of the data so that we improve the living conditions of the Namibian people.
Okay. Mr. Ipumbu Zakaria, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Reader News Analysis. We do appreciate sharing those insights and information with us.
You are most welcome, and thank you for the opportunity.
Okay. And with that being said, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. But you know, we'll be back shortly with yet more interesting news to unpack.
Great news! Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
The Vavutia University has extended the application deadline for the short new courses available. Faculty of Law, Commerce and Education, School of Law. Programs, a certificate in workplace dispute resolution, admission requirements, grade 12 senior certificate or equivalent, and QF level 4, with a minimum of 18 points in 5 best subjects and a D symbol in English, or grade 11 certificate with a minimum of 22 points in 5 subjects and a D symbol in English, plus 2 years relevant industry experience is required. Certificate in Telecommunications Policy and Regulation, admission requirements, grade 12 senior certificate or equivalent, NQF level 4 with a minimum of 18 points in 5 best subjects and a D symbol in English, or grade 11 certificate with a minimum of 22 points in 5 subjects and a D symbol in English, plus 2 years relevant industry experience is required. Cost, 5,500 Namibian dollars. Fees can be paid in 3 installments. Application deadline, 5th of September 2025. Velvicia University, where everyone is an achiever. Apply now at www.wu.edu.na.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. Now, mid-year this year, Eagle FM journalist and reporter Anakleta Haikara covered a story on 4 state-run green schemes in Kavango, grappling with an ongoing electricity crisis. an issue that was once again brought to light during the president's visit to the schemes last year. Now, government-operated green schemes projects in the Kavango regions continue to battle serious electricity challenges, threatening production and food security in Kavango East. The Sekondo, Uvunguvungu, Ndonga Linea and Shati Kongoro green schemes are all struggling with high electricity cost and unreliable supply. Now, this was revealed by farm managers during a courtesy visit by the Parliament Standing Committee on Natural Resources on perhaps like a month ago, and also, of course, brought to light as the president, that is President Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah, recently visited the green schemes. Floris Smith, the farm manager of Vunguvungu, said electricity costs often hamper productivity. To manage expenses, the project has resorted to irrigating crops only at night on weekends when power is believed to be cheaper. Meanwhile, the Ndonga Linear Green Scheme is grappling with escalating electricity expenses, spending approximately $1 million per month. That is more than $12 million annually. Now, this cost has become the scheme's most significant financial burden, severely impacting operations and sustainability. We've reached out to farm manager of Ndonga Linear Green Scheme, Jano Rental, and let's hear what he has to say. Good afternoon, Mr. Jano Rental, and welcome to On the Reader News Analysis.
Well, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. So I understand that Ndonga Linear Green Scheme has been experiencing quite a high amount of electricity in expenses and payments, going even up to $1 million. Can you kindly get into us how exactly that bill comes about and why it's so high?
Ndonga is one of the biggest farms in the Kavango East region currently. We planted a lot of hectareage, plus minus 600 hectares. So it is a lot of water we are pumping to irrigate all these pivots and all these crops that we planted. So, but if you work it back to hectareage, it's not that Ndonga's electricity bill is more expensive than other projects. Mm. It's just we planted a lot more than other projects. But the electricity is very high for all projects in the green scheme. Even the private guys are complaining the electricity is expensive.
Mm. So it's not exactly every month that it comes to $1 million, but the price is run about in that range, right?
It's in that range, mainly because, like this, especially the winter crops that we planted, it goes like, because we don't have any rain that helps us irrigate our field, so you will pump all the time for your winter crops. Summer crops also, we reach some places 1 million, but then it was more the drier months of the summer time. But we have planted a lot of hectareage. So that is why we are much higher than other projects, is because we planted maybe 3 times what they have planted.
Mm, I see.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So you were earlier telling me about it's roughly how much it is per hectare and how many hectares is Ndonga Linear Green Scheme?
We planted about 600 hectares this season. It's costing a plus minus $1,300 per hectare per month for electricity fees. So it depends also in, if we don't irrigate, if it's rain, then it will go a bit down. If it's more drier, it will go a bit up. But it's in that range of $1,300, $1,400 per hectare. So, yeah, so we planted about 600 hectares, and then we get to $1 million. Some months we had 750,000, other months 1 million, other months 900,000. But that's the range we are working in with electricity at Ndonga.
Mm, okay. And at the end of the day, profit-wise, in other words, you actually kind of like, I think I did learn something about 40% of what actually comes in goes to electricity. Is that the case?
Yeah. No. Okay. Our electricity is about, I can give you now percentage, it's about 20% of our inputs and all our cost is about 20% for electricity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but in that cost of the electricity, we received an invoice. In that invoice is about 33% of that invoice is maximum demand. That is a demand charge. They charge us that we didn't, we used it, but it's not a, like a usage fee on that thing, on the invoice. So you pay about $350,000 to Nored and then $700,000 for your usage. Mm. So that's a fee that every month you need to pay for Nored just to give you the service at the end of the day.
Actually.
So, yeah.
And it's
yeah.
common in every household, even here in the capital city.
Yes.
Yeah. In terms of, perhaps exploring other alternatives such as solar panels, have you maybe considered going that route also just to help reduce maybe the electricity expenses even to come down to 10%?
We are looking at solar at the moment. The biggest problem for solar is we still need the electrical grid here. Because to put the solar system with the batteries and everything just to get completely off the grid will be too expensive to make even profit at the end of the day for a project like Ndonga. The cost is just too much involved. So you will use the grid as a battery to store the things in. And it's expensive, still expensive, but we are looking into it, and I think that will be the way forward. Or if the electrical, we can get a cheaper electricity at the end of the day, if they can make a plan for us that the electricity is even cheaper, then we don't need to go up and do solar installations and all these things. And I think that is a reachable thing that can be done from the ministry and on from the energy suppliers even to us. At the end of the day, also solar, our whole system is designed on the farm to irrigate 24 hours a day. So if you're going to solar, then you are going to pump maybe 6-7 hours a day maximum, and that will later on not be worth it at the end of the day. Yes.
Yeah, I've also had the president say that she's gonna look into it, into this high electricity bill, but she says she can't promise anything. But overall, how did it make you feel as a farm manager for Lina? Say it again for us.
Ndonga Lina.
As the president came to visit you all, how did that just mean for you as somebody who's really playing their part in food security towards Namibia?
Yes, I enjoyed the visit of the president. She was here last year also, and she was the vice president. And she pushed for these farms to get up and running again and get all the inputs needed and all the equipment that needed. And I was very happy accepting her here, and she was very happy seeing what we have accomplished so far in a year's time that she from the last time she was here. So, and I think we pushed the production up 200% from the last time she was here to now. And the farm is good, and we have planted. We have a record yield this year. It's the most tonnage of maize we harvested on Nonga for the last, from it has been started in Donga Lenina. It's never reached this tonnage we are currently of harvesting here.
Okay.
Yes.
Now we wish you and all those that are involved in this production and the farm work all the very success, and hopefully a solution comes in terms of the electricity bill, eh?
Yes, yes. So we are still making a little bit of money, but it's not sustainable like this with the current electricity price. And also the fuel prices and all these things is also pushing us a bit down. But we can manage it if we can start managing our project and getting it up in full production. There's some places we can save a bit of money on electricity, but that's technology we will still need to invest in. Like I was speaking at with the president, we need to do some soil monitoring probes to put in. Then we can see precisely when do you need water, when do you do not need water. And that will bring about a 10% saving on our electricity. Just that. So that's a point that we are looking into also. That's a thing that maybe can start in the next month or two. And our workers is very committed currently. So our winter crops is looking very promising. So yeah, and we started with small scale farmers currently planting some green green maize for selling and some watermelons and butternuts. So yeah, I think Ndonga, the future looks very good for it. And we are pushing very hard here with all the workers.
Okay. Thank you so much, Mr. Yeah. Jana Rintel. Thank you for making time for us right here on the Radar News Analysis.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. Now, the Ministry of Agriculture, Water and Fisheries is exploring solar power solutions, but no subsidy mechanisms have been put in place yet. Now, according to reports, the ministry is considering grid-tied solar photovoltaic installations for key schemes, including Etunda, Sikondo, and Shatikongoro, which could reduce electricity expenses by up to 90%. Now, contracts for feasibility studies and design work are still being finalized. Could this be a better alternative? Well, let's discuss alongside Paulus Mulunger, who is the Secretary of the Board at the Renewable Energy Industry Associations Namibia, and also the Managing Member of Light Systems Namibia. Good afternoon, Mr. Paulus. It's such a pleasure to have you right here in studio with us.
Good afternoon, Dahofa. Thank you very much for having me. It's a great pleasure to be here. It's a change of season, so we're battling a few flus and coughs here and there, but it's an absolute pleasure to be here and discuss this topic of national interest.
I thought I was the only one battling a little bit of a sore throat, hey? Now, getting right into this discussion of the green schemes facing such high electricity bill, and of course, Jana Rintel spoke about off-grid system or something in that line, but you will best explain that to us. Could solar be a better alternative in this scenario?
A very good question, Dahofa, but what I'd like to start off with is to probably just give us a picture of the tariffs that we are charged here in Namibia.
Mm-hmm.
The tariffs are regulated by the Electricity Control Board, so they determine the tariffs that are charged. But one thing about the tariffs that we are charged here in Namibia is that they are cost reflective. So what does that mean, cost reflectivity? It means that you're paying for the generation cost of the unit of electricity. You're paying for the transmission or the transport of that cost to wherever you are. You're paying for additional costs for the manpower and all of that to bring that to you. You're paying for the margins that the that the distributor has requested for to manage their operations and so forth. So Namibians pay cost reflective tariff. That has resulted in us paying one of the highest tariffs in the SADC region.
Sure.
So what happens in other countries is that their tariffs are subsidized by government. But that's not the case in Namibia, apart from, of course, last year when government chipped in with some couple of millions that they paid to NamPower. But we understand those were special circumstances. It was an election year and so forth. But generally, our tariffs are cost-reflective, and they have always been increasing.
Mm.
So that's the reason why some of these institutions, like the green schemes, find themselves in this situation where, you know, and the electricity expense is some of the highest expenditure that that they incur. You know, naturally, you would want to incur expenses on your core business activities, which are in the instance of a green scheme, which is your fertilizers, you know, and your water and so forth. But electricity chips in there because, you know, it's a cost reflective tariff that we have. Now, unfortunately for Namibians, and apart from, you know, special periods like I mentioned, like last year when it was election year and the government came in, tariffs in Namibia are most likely going to increase. And there's a reason for that.
Yeah.
The main reason is that we are a net importer of our electricity. In other words, we do not generate as much electricity for ourselves as we need.
Okay.
Yeah, we do not generate enough. So we import electricity. And when we do this import, we are buying it from markets. We have, you know, established contracts, firm contracts, pay or take, you know, some of the contracts type that are there.
Yeah.
We, you know, with you know, we buy from SAP, the Southern African Power Pool. We buy from Eskom and so forth. And so we buy this electricity at premium tariffs. You would remember at some point when, you know, there was load shedding in South Africa, we didn't experience that, you know. There was problems also in Zambia very recently where we get electricity from. We didn't experience any of that. Why? It's because we are paying premium price for electricity. So, you know, these guys, Eskom and the likes, you know, will supply to those who pay. you know, and Namibia pays, you know. So that's one of the main reasons why our tariffs are high, because of that cost reflectability. And unfortunately, we import most of our power. Number two, our biggest generator of electricity in the country is the Rakana Hydropower Plant.
That I'm aware.
Yes, that is a seasonal power plant. So it only works, or it works best when there's water flowing and then the turbines run and it's able to produce electricity.
Like earlier this year when it rained really well.
Excellent. It was my next point in that, you know, Rakana produced amazing electricity last year because of the high volumes of water that we had. But unfortunately, that benefit could not be passed on to the end consumer. And the reason is, the tariff is regulated, so the price was set already. And so all the money that the utility made, NamPower made, you know, they're going to put it in our coffers, in their coffers for, you know, for future use and so forth. So Rakana produces the cheapest electricity in the country, but it's seasonal. Only during the rainy periods does it produce, in, you know, a lot of electricity.
Yeah.
Its sized capacity is actually enough to power the country at 700 megawatts, if I'm not mistaken. Our peak demand is around 620 in the winter periods. So the installed capacity is big enough to power the country, but all four turbines don't run at 100% all throughout the year. So we're forced to import electricity. So that is a situation in which we are at the moment.
Yeah.
And so for that reason, once again, we are always going to pay a lot of electricity for those two main reasons. So businesses, not just the green scheme, businesses, households are faced by the same predicament. So that is bleak, right? That is a bad thing. But the Lord above us, you know, for every battle challenge that he gives you, he gives you a solution.
True.
So what did the Lord give us? The Lord gave us the sun. Namibia has some of the best solar in the world, right? In the world, not in Africa,
okay,
not in the southern region, in the world. The sun shines beautifully, like on this sunny day. I can guarantee you 100% without any uncertainty that the sun is shining as beautifully as it is here in Ventuk, in the rest of the country, perhaps apart from the coast, as with clearly like it is here today.
Yeah.
And it is like this for 300 days in a year. So this is a resource that we have, right, that is providing us quality irradiance that we can make use of, right? When internationals come to Namibia and they live here for a certain period of time and they experience, you know, the quality of sunlight that we have here, you know, they feel that it's a big shame that we're not putting the sun to work. Okay, so we are blessed with this endowed, you know, natural resource that we can make use of to help us solve some of the challenges that we have. Okay. So Mr. Jano in his discussion mentioned that, you know, there are certain off-grid systems that are costly and so forth. Yes, off-grid systems are costly. And before I explain the solutions that might work, I just want to quickly give a distinction of the various types of solar systems there are and what solution might perhaps work for the green schemes.
Okay.
So we have off-grid systems. It's one type of solar system. This is typically installed at a place that is not connected to the national grid. There is no NamPower. There is no NORED in their instance. There is no City of Ventuk or any other distributor, Erongo Red. So these are typical places like your farms, you know, households that are far away from the grid. Those, if they want electricity in these remote places that are not connected to the grid, an off-grid solution is the ideal solution. It comes with solar panels, a solar inverter, and batteries. Now, depending on your type of application, the solar system will vary in size. A small household with basic appliances will need a very small basic system, around 10, 15, 20,000 up to, you know, 100,000, depending on how far you want to stretch it. An institution like the Green Scheme, that is massive. It's got massive loads. So we're talking about a huge system with massive storage if they wanted to go off solar.
Yeah.
But this green scheme does not need to go off solar because there are other types of solar systems. The next type of solar system that I'd like to discuss is a hybrid solar system, which encompasses or is a combination of, you know, the grid and the solar system working in tandem, working together.
Interesting.
So we have the grid as they have at the green scheme, and you have a solar system with storage. That is a possible solution that can work at the green scheme. The last type of solar solution, which can work at the green scheme, is a grid-tied system. And Mr. Yana also mentioned that one in his discussion. A grid-tied system does not come with storage, but it's solar panels, and it only works during the day. Okay, that's a key distinction. The other two types of systems work both during the day and at night when the sun is not shining.
Mm-hmm.
A grid-tied system only works during the day.
Okay.
Yeah. So what are the probable solutions that the green schemes can undertake?
You tell us.
Yes, 20% is a huge expense for an institution like that. Okay?
Actually.
Yeah. And again, remember, costs are always going to rise. The tariff of electricity most likely,
mm-mm,
right, is always going to rise because Nampower, in order for them to generate its own electricity or enough electricity for the country, will probably need to build plants, so they'll need investments and so forth, unless government can invest in Nampower. But government has many issues on their table. The biggest issue that government has at the moment when it comes to electrification is rural electrification, because only about 60% of the Namibian population is connected to the national grid.
Yeah.
40% of Namibians are not connected to the national grid. So government is faced with this challenge of connecting the 40% that are not connected to the national grid. So its efforts are highly focused on making sure they connect. In fact, government has set a target that by 2030 it should connect up to 80% of our nationals. We should have an electrification rate of up to 80%.
Yeah.
And that 70% must be locally generated. So
it's contained in the NDPC.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Exactly. So that is where government's efforts are focused on. They're not focused on necessarily reducing the electricity bill, apart from, again, special circumstances like election years and so forth.
Uh-huh.
And so, institutions like green schemes have to become smarter now. We have to think of solutions. We have this natural resource, the sun. We have solar systems that are capable of providing a solution. So what is an ideal solar solution? I'm sure the engineers at the Ministry of Works and Transport, together with the necessary teams, are putting together these types of solutions. They understand them very well as well.
Mm-hmm.
So what is a probable solution that I foresee being implemented at not just Setikongoro Green Scheme, but at all the other four green schemes? These are green schemes that are of national importance, by the way.
Yeah, we're talking about food security.
We're talking about food security. We need to run these institutions at 100%. I foresee a grid-tied system as an ideal, solution as a start for these green schemes. Panel prices have been reducing over the years, so the cost of solar systems is not as high as they were, say, three, four, five years ago, right? So a solar system today is cheaper than it was ever before. And we don't know, it might be the cheapest yet that it will ever be. It might not go cheaper. So this is actually the ideal time to install solar systems. Obviously, these systems need to be sized properly. That's why proper studies must be conducted to provide the most efficient solution. We have seen of many instances, in industry, of systems that have been installed that were not spec'd correctly. And this is some of the challenges that comes in, into the market, where people who do not size systems properly, they just hear of solar, go and install a solar system. A client does not understand what the solar system is capable of. Don't understand how to manage a system. The system is not maintained, things like those. So these systems need to be sized properly. That's the first thing that needs to be done. Okay. Once a solar system is sized and spec'd correctly, there is something additionally that the green schemes can look to when it comes to managing the electricity.
Mm.
And I call that demand side management. Okay, so what does demand side management mean? It means the green scheme has to manage its operations, to take the best advantage of the solar system.
Yeah.
So us solar experts will size a system for you and will tell you, how the system operates. It's got a curve, the operational curve of a solar system, and then we'll tell you that, the solar system performs best during certain hours. So the green scheme now needs to go back and look at its operations and find out, can we run our pumps when the solar system is at its most efficient, which is between the hours of, say, 11 and 2 o'clock, 11 o'clock in the morning to 2 o'clock in the afternoon?
Yeah.
Right? Let's run our pumps at maximum to irrigate during this period. We They are charged a time of use tariff, so there's a peak period. Reduce your operations during peak times. That is between 6 o'clock in the morning and 9 o'clock in the morning, as well as 5 o'clock in the afternoon to 7 o'clock in the afternoon, right? Reduce your consumption to minimum during peak periods. Maximize production when the sun is shining. And I like one thing that he mentioned. He mentioned that they're running pumps at night and over weekends.
Yeah.
The reason they do that is because that is when they're charged off-peak pricing. This is the cheapest of the time-of-use tariff.
Yeah, yeah.
And do that as well. If you can, if they can manage their operations in that manner where they get a properly sized solar system, they run it during the efficient period of when the solar is running at 100%, and then run the some of the operations at night, they can significantly reduce that 20% expense and hopefully, you know, get them to running at profitability. Another thing, you know, that the farms can look at is most likely some of these pumps that they're running are old model pumps, inefficient pumps that are high consumers of electricity.
Yeah.
So they also need to look at getting state of the art, more energy efficient pumps. We know that pumps are critical for their business. They will need those. But chances are the pumps that were installed, they are pre-independence or very, very old, inefficient, you know, bad rated, bad grade electricity consuming pumps. So they also have to look at, you know, newer energy efficient pumps, which are probably, you know, less, which use less energy and provide more output. Yeah, obviously the capital outlay will be greater
at the beginning,
inception, but over the long run, you know, the payback is there. And this is also the thinking that has to happen when we're providing these types of solution. We have to look at what am I going to invest now? What payback period am I looking at? And we know that for our solar systems, they have payback periods of, for grid-tied systems, payback periods now of not more than 4 years. Right. And after that, you have reduced your electricity consumption from 20% of your expenses to 10% or some, you know, 12%.
Yeah, yeah.
And that additional fees, that extra money that you save after 4 years, after the system has paid itself off, can now go into the operations, to the efficient operation of, you know, the system. So green schemes also have to look at it from, you know, this financial background. A bit of a mouthful, but
quite of a mouthful, but I think you spoke about the second one, the hybrid system which works both solar and electricity. I think I like that one.
Yes. a hybrid system, again, is a possibility as well for the green scheme. It's a possibility for the green scheme in that, look, they probably have an office that they run and some accommodation, perhaps. I'm not 100% sure what type of loads are on the green schemes, but a hybrid system can be tailored such that the pumps are mainly run during the day directly from the solar panels. They have a small battery backup system that runs maybe the key equipment that we said need to run during the peak periods. It can be set up such that those key equipment that need to be run during peak periods can be run from a smaller battery bank. You don't need to provide a large, expensive battery bank to run the pumps. No, you don't need to do that. It's not necessary, right? You can have a smaller battery bank, right, that is part of a hybrid system that powers your primary loads that need to run during that peak period. I promise you, Ndafa, with a proper design, the green scheme can reduce their electricity bill by a significant amount. I remembered one thing that Mr. Yano spoke about, which is the demand charge.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, the demand charge is a massive challenge. Demand charge is a breaker charge, is a capacity charge based on how much power you consume from the grid. What is a peak power in kilovolts do you consume at any point in time in the month? And so you are charged for that. NORED, I think, charges around 137 Namibian dollars per volt amp. So if you say, you know, use around, if you reach a capacity of 137 kilowatt, they will charge you that equivalent. I've seen bills of institutions that are paying 80,000, 100,000 just for that demand charge. Okay. So that is based on your maximum demand, on your maximum capacity. And one can find a way around that as well.
Okay.
Yeah, with a grid, with a well-designed solar system, if we find out how many hours does the do the pumps need to run for in a day, right? We can size our solar system such that most of the power is provided by the solar system, and help you reduce the breaker size that NORAD has installed at the green scheme to reduce that charge.
Yeah.
We don't want to do away with the grid, right? We're not removing the grid. We're just trying to manage expenses.
Mm.
So reduce the breaker size such that you have some operation at night, or you rotate how you irrigate. You don't irrigate. You don't switch on all the pumps at once.
Yeah.
At night, you reduce the number of pumps that you use at night, and you ration them to make sure that you irrigate the area that you want. And then you take advantage of having a smaller breaker. There are ways that one can get around on how to manage this stuff.
Yeah. I'm so glad you're here with us.
No, it's a pleasure to be here.
You know what? The president did mention something about if we are talking about the green schemes and, of course, food security, and the electricity bill is this high, then we're just fooling ourselves. Something needs to be done. And this leads me to my next question. The Parliament Standing Committee on Natural Resources also visited the green schemes prior to President Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah taking her visit there. And, of course, we, Eagle FM, have been consistently reporting on it. And I can really attest to this, as our reporter, Anakleta Aikera, has been feeding the nation on such stories. And she's brought up that story of high electricity for quite some time. But then this is where the question comes in to say, I mean, when those that are in leadership and those that have to make the decisions on what best fits this government green schemes, do they consult stakeholders, not stakeholders, but private companies such as yourself and others to say, what do you think is the best option forward?
Yes, a very good question, Dahafa. But one thing that you must remember as well is that there are various interests, right? There are various interests that need to be catered for. Remember, we have these REDS and the national utility and so forth. Now, these types of institutions like the green schemes, these are places that generate revenue for these institutions. So one has to be careful not to tiptoe too much on somebody else's bread and butter and so forth. But yeah, coming back to your question in terms of consulting, yes, our chairperson for the association, Yan Basson, is a member of an electricity task force that has also engage members of the Parliamentary Standing Committee on Natural Resources.
Okay.
And these types of discussions have been had. So some of our inputs are coming through, but obviously, like I mentioned beforehand, you know, we just don't want to rock up there and tell, you know, everybody that, yeah, here's the solution.
Yeah.
When you're sitting next to the, you know, bosses from NAMPOWER, they might squeeze you, you know, out from the next session.
Yeah,
and so we really, yeah, we have to find a way to gradually, you know, introduce some of the solutions, make everybody really understand that, look, don't look out for your institution only. Yes, we know that you have to, you know, you have to survive, you know, you have to pay, you have expenses, you have to, you know, generate income and so forth. But look at it from a larger point of view as well. If electricity is made cheaper, you know, for Namibians, if electricity is made cheaper for the green scheme, it now means they can do more.
Exactly.
You know, they can irrigate more.
Exactly.
And they can secure our food production.
We don't have to import so much from South Africa anymore.
We don't have to import a lot. If electricity is made cheaper, then I am more inclined to start another business because I know that my operational expenses will not be that high. I might be able to manage them. I tell you, if you dare start a business that is a high electricity consuming business, you might end up, you know, giving up altogether because electricity will be a very, very big expense that you have to account for. I mean, there are all these demand charges and this high tariff. So we really have to look at ways on how can we reduce the cost of electricity so that we can boost our economy. The electricity consumption is an indicator of the economic development of a country.
Yeah.
If our country is consuming more electricity, it means that more development is taking place.
Yeah.
Now, we've been stuck on this peak demand of 640 megawatts for the past, I don't know how many years. which for me is worrisome. It means that, you know, nothing new is really coming up, or whatever new is coming up is replacing something dying, because we are stuck at that peak demand for the longest time that I've been in this industry. Mm. We are struggling to go to 700 megawatts of electricity, or 1 gigawatt there roundabout.
Mm.
And so for me, that's a worrying figure. It means that, you know, there's not enough activity within the economy, and electricity might be a contributing factor to that.
Mm. Mm. Now, all this that you shared in regards to the green scheme, can it also apply as a household? Like, for instance, I live in the capital city and I'm struggling with high electricity. Especially, I've come to realize that the consumption is not the same, or the tariffs or the payment, it's not the same for somebody who stays in Greenwald, somebody who stays in Kleinwinduk, somebody who stays in the Ryder Park. Yes. It varies. So for a household person, and perhaps I also now want to go the hybrid way, is it something similar?
Yes, yes. Everybody can look. The sun is not discriminatory. It just doesn't shine at the green scheme or in one person's house. The sun shines everywhere in the country. So that basically means everybody can benefit.
Okay.
And the sun will give you the cheapest electricity, because our solar systems have payback periods. The investment that you put in will pay itself off after that you have permanently reduced your electricity bill. So a short answer to your question is that yes, everybody can benefit, both households and businesses. And, you know, our company, it's not as a promotion, but we are attending various trade fairs, you know, exhibitions and so forth, to kind of, you know, inform people out there that, yes, they can benefit from the sun, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We have the Ministry of Mines and Energy that is giving out, you know, loans, solar revolving fund, giving out loans of up to 60,000 for off-grid systems and so forth. So everybody can benefit. You know, hybrid systems, they're going to become very popular. There is a little bit of resistance with the distributors, mm-hmm. but we are trying to manage that, especially from the association and so forth. But really, it's to the benefit of Namibians that these people benefit from the resource that is God-given to them. We shouldn't be against, you know, Namibians benefiting from this.
Yeah.
Yes.
I hear you.
Yeah.
Mr. Paulus Mulunga, thank you so much for making time for us right here and educating us in that angle right here on the Reader News Analysis.
It's a pleasure to have been here to share this information. I look forward to being back again.
Of course, huh? And there you had it from Paulus Mulunga, who is the Secretary of the Board at Renewable Energy Industry Associations Namibia, and also the Managing Member of Light Systems Namibia. So in other words, he specializes in solar systems, y'all. Now that being said, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. But you are tuned into On The Reader News Analysis. Should you want to partake in the news analysis, 083-288-401 is the number in studio.
Great news! Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200.
Get your monthly essential products for just 599 Namibian dollars at USAID. 10 kilograms each of Sugar King White Sugar, Top Score Super Maize Meal, and the Buck Pro Fat Cook Flour. Also 5 kilos Rice King, as well as 500 grams Pasta King Pasta. All 5 products for only 599 Namibian dollars. You save, I save. Yes, we all save at USAID.
Your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
Welcome back. And now we are not done talking about high electricity bill at the green schemes. And of course, we're still talking about what mitigations could be done in the meantime in regards to the high electricity bill. Maybe before we even move on to solar. Now we're joined in studio by Israel Hawanga. He is the head of engineering. Good afternoon, Mr. Hawanga. And it's a pleasure to have you right here with us.
Thank you. Thank you. Happy.
Okay. Now, of course, the green schemes is, electricity bill, I guess. It's something that we can't really finish to talk about until we find a solution. Just from your end, say, as an electrician, what is it that needs to be done to make sure that Namibia, we're not just talking about food security, but we're doing everything. Everybody's playing their part to ensure that food security come next year, we're actually drawing very closer to that line.
To start with, Paulus has said most of has broken down most things, but to add on what he said, if you look at countries like China, for instance,
mm-hmm.
Or the United States, their demand goes into terawatts, with China clocking 8 terawatts of power. That shows where our development as a country in general is.
Mm-hmm.
But as you mentioned, we're not only looking at food security, because we are only covering one sector.
One angle,
but
okay.
With power prices in this country, it goes down all the way to the end users. And if we can either solve it from the end user side, or we can solve it from the government side. Let me start with the government side.
Mm-hmm.
We, as a country, export up to 60% on peak of our power. Now, if the government has to invest in non-power and we build a solar park so we generate our power locally, it's going to bring down the cost. Like Paulus mentioned, when you buy your electricity at a service station or at a power distributor, you don't only pay for the units that you are using. You are paying for, you are contributing to the salary of the artisan that is there. You are contributing to their fuel. You are contributing to the distribution lines. So that amounts then to a higher tariff. If you look up stats, We have one of the highest tariffs in Africa, because in SADC, because we contribute to so many things that are not mentioned on the little slip when you buy your electricity. But then if we now to start producing our power locally, it's gonna bring down the costs that we pay when we import power. When you are importing that power, South Africa, we import power from South Africa, for instance, and you will find South Africa has load shedding, but we are still having power. Why? Because we are paying a lot. They get a lot of money from us, so they will prioritize us over their own people. So on the government side, an investment into non-power to build, to decentralize power production. You have a solar farm. We have a few now. We have Omburu that has been running since 2022. You have several other smaller ones where there is one in Ochivarongo being upgraded now to 10 megawatts.
Okay.
There are several that are there, but they are not enough to meet our peak which range is now ranging between 670 to 700 megawatts.
Mm.
Now, on the consumer side.
Okay, on the consumer side, go ahead.
How do we resolve it from the consumer side? It's understanding the usage of power, when to draw the most power. We have what we call peak periods in electrical. It's similar to rush hour when you are driving. So in the mornings,
yeah,
when everyone is preparing to go to school, preparing to go to work, that's when everyone has the highest demand of power. Everyone is boiling water. This one is cooking. So then on that peak, you pay the most during those times. And then in the is now at home, everyone is again boiling water to shower, everyone is cooking. That is again another peak period. So on the consumer side is to know when to draw the most power. Mm-hmm. And secondly, there is some resistance from power distributors with integration of solar systems, because I mean you are now taking away business from them by supplying power that you don't pay for. There is some sort of resistance, but if people get to understand what they can do with solar can be installed anywhere. It doesn't matter if it's in town and you already have a grid power from City of Windhoek or from the Reds or from a Premier. The solar system can still be integrated on. And as technology is now advancing, you have solar inverters that can be programmed with time to say, you only want to use the grid from this hour to this hour. And the rest of the time, you are either using battery stored power or you are using directly from the panels.
Okay. Now, according to reports, the ministry is considering, that is the Ministry of Agriculture, Water and Fisheries, is considering grid-tied solar photovoltaic installations for key schemes. But are there enough technical skills in the industry to build these required solar systems?
Yeah, the industry is actually saturated now. We have companies that have been standing for quite some time that have a traceable record. Companies like if you take companies like Volmund Engineering, you look at companies like Light System Namibia, they have track record of where they've worked and how they reduce costs at certain establishments and households. So the technical expertise is there.
Okay.
from consultancy to architectural to doing the actual work. The expertise is there.
Okay. Now, if the expertise are there, then what could be causing some of the delays in this implementations?
Okay, as much as solar is cheap to free electricity, the setup it does not come cheap. A good setup of a power plant, a solar power plant, does not come cheap. So the investment of the initial setup is quite high, but we reason it on the end product. How much are you going to save then after the setup is done? So the delay is mostly on financing it. Since there mm-hmm. isn't really a big subsidy from the government side to on solar installations,
okay.
the investment that is there now, the subsidy that is currently there now from Ministry of Mines, it goes up to 60,000, if I'm not mistaken. But 60,000, that will get you a 2 to 3 kilowatt of an off-grid system. Well, while in depending now on the maximum demand of the Ndongelinene project, a setup of say 6 megawatt will go in excess of 15 million.
Oh, I see. But at least it's a once-off thing, just touches or what do you call it, maintenance here and there.
Yes.
Okay. Now, finally, what are your additional contributions in regards to this particular topic we're talking about before I let you go, Mr. Israel?
Well, okay, the thing is, I'm in support of the green scheme exploring solar, because there is now an independent power producer policy that is implemented, where one can have a solar farm or a solar park that is producing power primarily for them to use, and they can always sell the excess power to the national power distributor, which is NamPower.
Mm-hmm.
So one can have their park that is giving power to the irrigation and selling excess to NamPower, which then also brings in income.
Mm-hmm. Are you referring to the modified single buyer model?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you so much, Mr. Israel Owanga, for making time for us right here on the Radar News Analysis. We do appreciate your insights with us.
All right, happy.
Okay.
Bye.
And there we had it for Israel Owanga. He is the head of engineering and he's an electrician himself. And of course, he knows also about solar panels. Now, with that being said, let's pause right here in Namibia. We'll be back shortly with news beyond the borders. Remember, this is On The Radar News Analysis. You can also partake in the news analysis. Our studio line is open. 083-288-401 is the number that gets you in studio.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Great news! Impa just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Impa? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Impa has to offer at an unbeatable price. Impa, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Welcome back. Now brace yourself for news beyond the borders. And we know we always start off regionally, move over to continental news, and thereafter we bring you international news. Now we're starting off in South Africa, where Johannesburg is hosting SA-UK Trade Seminar. Let's weigh in on that.
Let's bring you this now. The Department of Trade, Industry and Competition, in partnership with the South African Chamber of Commerce and the Industry and the British High Commission, beg your pardon, they're all holding a seminar in Pretoria to highlight the trade agreement between Southern African countries and the UK. Watching this story is our economics reporter, Nosipho Radebe, who joins us now live from Pretoria. And Nosipho, help us break down what this agreement typically entails.
So a very good morning to you, Ayanda, and to the viewers at home. Well, we are coming to you live from Melrose. So we're just here in Johannesburg getting ready for that seminar to take place. And you, as you can see behind me in the background, we're still getting all the various participants are coming in and setup is still ongoing. But essentially, South African businesses are being invited here to attend an awareness seminar on the SACU-M UK Economic Partnership Agreement. And that's taking place here this morning from 10 o'clock. And so for those then who don't understand or unfamiliar then with what SACU-M stands for, that's for the Southern African Customs Union plus Mozambique. This is a regional trade bloc that brings together South Africa, Botswana, Lesotho, Namibia, Eswatini and Mozambique. And by negotiating then as a single bloc, these countries have more influence in trade talks, making it easier then to secure better market access, say common rules and remove barriers then for exporters. And this seminar, as you pointed out, Ayanda, is being hosted by the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition in partnership then with the South African Chamber of Commerce and Industry, as well as the British High Commission. And it's part of a broader awareness then roadshow. And its goal essentially is to help local exporters understand the opportunities available under the trade deal with the United Kingdom. And those participants who will be coming in today will hear from government officials, industry experts, as well as business chambers and financial institutions. And the sessions that will take place today will cover everything from export regulations, compliance and product standards to financing options and available government incentive schemes. And the focus, Ayanda, will also be on untapped sectors like agriculture and automotive, where South African businesses could expand their exports. And I guess to look at the timing then of the seminar, it comes at a critical time then for exporters. As you know, the Trump tariffs have put pressure on South African businesses. Manufacturers are warning of earnings hits, and surveys show sentiment here is slipping back into contraction. So in response, South Africa is actively seeking to expand its global trade partnerships, and the SACU-M UK EPA is part of that strategy. So this seminar, Ayanda, is designed not only to provide guidance, but also to create then a platform for dialogue and peer learning. Businesses will also have the opportunity to network here with trade experts and other exporters and government representatives, sharing insights in and best practices to make the most then of the EPA. And then for businesses that are ready to grow internationally, I guess this is a unique chance then to gain firsthand information on how to navigate export procedures, meet international standards, and also leverage then support from both government and industry. And so, of course, we'll catch up then with the British High Commission here as well. We'll also speak to the government government officials here from the Trade and Industry Competition Department, hear from them the importance then of the seminar, and also just highlight the timing of this seminar taking place now. And so, Ayanda, we'll continue to give you coverage. And as I mentioned, that this will be getting underway from 10 o'clock this morning and, of course, run throughout the afternoon. Here in Melrose, in Johannesburg. But for short, just to sum it up, this event is a key opportunity for South African businesses to learn how the SACU-M UK trade deal works and explore new export opportunities and ensure then that they are ready to compete on the global stage. But for now, Ayanda, it's
also still in South Africa, the government is urged to fast-track e-hailing service regulations that, of course, following what recently transpired in South Africa as an e-hailing driver was set on fire.
All right, let's shift gears slightly, excuse the pun, and have this discussion. Recent transport tensions and protests in Soweto are putting pressure on the government to fast-track regulations for e-hailing services in South Africa. The demonstrations follow the death of 27-year-old Uber driver that's outside Maponya Mall, reportedly linked to a dispute between e-hailing operators and taxi drivers. Let's speak about just, I suppose, the work that's been done to try see through these regulations if, in fact, there has been any progress. Vatuga Mbelengwa is with the National E-Hailing Federation of South Africa and joins us now in studio. Good to see you, sir. Thanks very much indeed for popping by. And we were hoping to have this discussion in the wake of some kind of communication yesterday that there was meant to be the release of e-hailing regulations. I'm not sure how true that is and whether or not, in fact, that's even happened.
Yeah, we I think generally the industry is waiting for clear direction from government. And we're just at the point of really, really believing that now it's just a lack of political will. And we've made so many contributions over the years. We've engaged, we've volunteered. There's been task team or contrast team. At a point in time, we need political will to be able to take on these challenges and really transform this industry. I think it's a potential filled industry, and we are not tapping into it. And considering the desperate situation of our country from an economic stance, employment stance, and even from a tax revenue collection perspective, we need to really harness the potential within these kind of e-hailing sectors. And we need to support local organizations in structuring and ensuring we set a determination for this industry ourselves as a country.
Yeah. I think generally speaking, the story is kind of, you know, pushed into the headlines whenever there's an incident like what we saw at Maponya Mall. But I wonder whether ordinary South Africans, including those who use Ubers frequently, understand the sticking points, you know? In the past, there's been a lot said about permits and there not being enough permits and the backlog. But I also know there's a lot of contention around the National Land Transport Amendment Act. In layman's terms, where are the sticking points?
Look, you know, the National Land Transport Amendment Act has had its recommendations. It's been published. We've been back and forth quite substantially around it. And again, it leads to political will. I mean, within the NLTA Section 66, it empowers your MECs to be able to regulate pricing. But no MEC in the country has used that law. So we feel like we've got the wrong people in power, people who just don't have the willpower or the aptitude or the attitude or the willingness, in fact, just to take a decision that favors participants, that favors the citizens of this country. We feel that government really is so sensitive, and they handle the likes of Uber with sensitive gloves, with kitty gloves. And it doesn't serve our country, doesn't serve our economy. At the end of the day, despite every conflict, beyond every violent act, at the root cause of it, is that we've got an unregulated system here. We've got an unregulated transportation sector. We've got a government whereby our government, our Department of Transport, has been on moratorium for better part of the most 2 decades and not issuing permits out properly. But the industry is growing. Cars are out there. Law enforcement is selective in empowering or enforcing the law. I mean, we've got this big permitting strike going on about cars being impounded everywhere. And they're impounding cars that because they don't have permits, but the city isn't able to issue permits. So we find ourselves in a situation here whereby government needs to govern. We need political leadership. We need will, political will. We need skilled people at the helm, not people who are very offended. I mean, I've got such a difficult relationship with our own department because of the things we say, and we need to be able to express ourselves and still have a government that's willing to engage us. You know, we express ourselves, we share our opinions, we participate in public things. But when it really gets to the sticking points, they're selective in engaging us because they've been offended by some of our utterances. But the reality is, as long as people are being burnt in cars, they are failing, and we need to be honest and frank about that.
Yeah.
And it's just a lack of will.
So what are you saying? Part of it is actually retaliatory. You know, there's a dragging of feet because, you know, you're saying things that aren't palatable.
There's a dragging of feet, and there's almost like a almost sensitized language that's expected.
Yeah.
And we can't sensitize this language. You need to be honest about this thing. You're not controlling, you know, especially because when you look at these violent situations, it's very actionary, you know, like we are not proactive in providing any solution or addressing any problem full time. Now, the utterances then was always then leads to an adversarial sort of situation whereby it's e-hailing versus taxis. And as a government, you can't be doing that. You need to be curating an industry so that everybody who participates in it knows how to participate, knows how to behave, what's expected of them, and where the parameters are, so that you are able to hold people to account when those parameters have been broken.
Yeah. A lot of what the e-hailing industry has come with is actually quite unprecedented. I mean, it's even as recent as 15 years ago, it's hard to imagine a scenario where you can live in Johannesburg and get around with ease without actually owning a car. Mm. The point I'm trying to get at is that there's a lot of reinventing of the wheel, excuse the pun. You know, we have to think differently and not necessarily assume that the way in which, you know, the laws were put together would work. Are there countries that have gotten this right?
Look, I think one of the things that are important to consider is that we do need to have an agile legal making framework. Mm. And we take too long to pass laws. And we should then consider the right, the impact of disruption, especially tech disruptions all over the world. So the disruption of Uber and Bolt isn't unique to us. I think what's unique is our lack of response to the situation. And we're sitting back and letting South Africans who are public transportation operators take the blame and not holding this global disruptor to account. Now, we must appreciate that tech and the tech disruption is going to every industry. And e-hailing is just the start. You've got even your sweep south where you've got your domestic workers that are app-based workers. And this is going to across all industries. And we really need to start then becoming more agile as a government and becoming more proactive in setting parameters. But I think more importantly, we need to decide the impact of technology. Do we want it to empower and aid our people in building businesses and increasing their economic participation? Or do we want it replaced? Because you look at the investment behavior of organizations like Uber. They are building driverless vehicles. They're not interested in the human element. They're going to push people out. And what we can definitely see with the kind of political behavior is that our politicians will allow it. Our politicians who are going to promise jobs every day, who fail to regulate these things, will eventually allow for self-driving vehicles when South Africans need those that work.
Hmm.
Landslides pose ongoing threat across Africa.
To Sudan now, where at least 1,000 people have been killed in a landslide that leveled an entire village in the central Darfur state. That's according to a local armed group, the Sudan Liberation Movement. The landslide struck the village of Tarsin in the Mara Mountains on Sunday after days of heavy rainfall. Only one person is said to have survived the disaster. So far, local sources say 90 bodies of victims have been recovered, with the pace of removing the debris and recovering remains slow and using primitive equipment. The United Nations and aid agencies have responded to an appeal to help retrieve the bodies of the victims by offering to mobilize support. Many people had sought shelter in the area after fleeing North Darfur State, which remains the center of fighting between the army and the paramilitary rapid support forces. And for more on this, we spoke to our correspondent in Khartoum, Naba Mohideen. Here's what she said.
Actually, this baneful incident is not the first incident in Jabal Marra. The same incident occurred in 2013. Right now, the situation is still beyond dire. Villagers from the surrounding villages are trying to help in burying those people who were killed by the landslide. More than 1,000 people got killed, only one survivor in that area. But there is a risk also of other landslides because this area is really fragile. The geological formation of this area makes it very vulnerable to such landslides. There is risk of recurring of the same incident in other places in Jabal Marra. So rescue is needed right now, and awareness is needed for villagers in surrounding villages to prevent such painful incidents. The situation is beyond dire. There is many statements by Sudan's People Liberation Movement, the movement that controlling this area, and also by the Sudanese Sovereign Council and head of Sudanese Sovereign Council and the military leader, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, as well as the Prime Minister. They promised of providing help for those in need, the surrounding villages, to help in any procedures that can help in preventing such painful incidents. The situation is beyond dire, and it's a really sad morning for millions of Sudanese who are still in the country. Actually, this needs a really faithful cooperation between the rebel group that controlling this area under the leadership of Abdul Wahid Mohamed Noor and the Sudanese government, and also the NGOs that may help people who are still trapped there, the villagers in other mountains, in Nuba Mountains and in Jabal Marra, the surroundings of Jabal Marra Mountain. So it needs an urgent intervention, and it needs a cooperation regarding the politics, regarding any kind of disputes between the rebel group under the leadership of Abdul Wahid Mohamed Noor and the Sudanese government, to facilitate aid, to facilitate rescuing villagers in surrounding villages, to make sure that such painful incidents will not take place in near future, because it's really vulnerable to such incidents because of the rainy season, because of heavy rains, and because of the formation of that area makes it very vulnerable to landslides. It's not the first time, and maybe it will not be the last time, unless all of the parties cooperate to help those in need and to evacuate the villagers in surrounding villages.
Landslides are a recurring problem on the African continent. They are triggered by extreme rainfall events that cause widespread flooding and often impact areas where soil has been recently disturbed for development. CGTN's David Mithil looks at some of the deadliest events in the recent past.
The West African nation of Guinea is among countries reeling from a natural disaster after heavy rains caused a landslide near the capital, Conakry. The country's disaster management agency said 11 people were killed and 10 others seriously wounded in last week's flooding. Earlier this year, heavy rains in South Africa's KwaZulu-Natal province triggered floods and landslides, killing at least 9 people, according to authorities. The incident came 3 years after record-breaking rain inundated the port city of Durban, also in KwaZulu-Natal, killing 435 people, according to the International Federation of the Red Cross. More than 9.
And with that, we have now come to the conclusion of today's episode of On The Radar News Analysis. Do stay tuned for the Onkonana Dinge program brought to you by Loise Shimi. And thereafter, the Home Run Show with Dwight and Helmut at 16:30. The Business Economic segment comes your way at 1800 hours. And of course, do stay tuned for other programs as well. And tune in tomorrow, same time, same place, right here on Eagle FM frequencies from 1300 hours to 1430 for another episode of On The Radar News Analysis. From Indafa Apijuju, it is goodbye, and have yourself a wonderful Wednesday ahead.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Great news. Impa just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Build. Why should you do that? You know, a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Omutiha utekirwa kaguna iimatina omjo. Chikawa shafasa na nana nongeshifa ya ishiwike moshiwana. Iye moyao ota ingongotisa mwene. Anangeshifa ya Namibia ombitombwa na wa oronjika. Seitha nina omayakuro nilanditoma yoe yongeshifa yoe okupitiramo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende tuimemeha uu kakombanga nina. Kara omkwashi pareki uimepo yomo programa detu. Moambo dengira selma konara heka tuimu. Datu heari hamano tano oliyaj. Eagle FM, the eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts or previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?